It's another fine day at Camp Dynasty. I am Counselor Austin, joined by Counselor Colin. And it's better late than never this week, Colin. I am off the heels of a trip through New England in which I was talking to the Patriots staff about what are you doing at pick number three? Like, give me the intel. I wish I was doing that, because what we're doing today would have been much easier for me, which is flavors of takes and making bold predictions for what's about to happen in just a few weeks' time.
Yeah, you went and saw the eclipse.
I did.
In the path of totality.
Correct.
How was it?
It was surreal. It was very... like life changing feels a little bit rich, but like it kind of felt a little life changing, honestly.
Right. Yeah, I was here in Wisconsin. We got 83.5% coverage. So it got a little, it looked like it was overcast for like 3 minutes and then it was over for us. So not exactly life changing over here, but life changing is the NFL draft for these players. And we are going to, maybe shit on a couple of them in this episode because of our flavors of takes.
Yeah, I mean, this, so to bring everybody up to speed, this is something that we did last year. We are expanding our menu of takes, if you will, because nothing goes with the NFL draft like a side of hot wings, Colin. So we have six different sauces. Six, yes. We did five last year. It is now six of varying levels of spice. So we are going to start with the intro wing, with like the top of the chart on the menu. And we're going to go all the way down to the one that I will never order, which is the bottom of that chart. So
funny story. Dave's Hot Chicken is a restaurant chain. Yes. And they have a Reaper heat.
Okay.
Me and a couple coworkers went to Dave's Hot Chicken, and one of the coworkers, big spice guy, and he's like, "Can I get the Reaper?" And they're like, "I would not advise it. You have to sign a waiver in order to get it." And he's like going back and forth. He's like, "Yeah, but like, is it kind of a bit, or is it like actually that spicy?" And the chef comes out of the back. He's like, "Hey, don't ruin the rest of your day by eating this." And he ended up getting a little like a chicken nugget with the Reaper dusting on it, and he was like beet red and like out of commission for the rest of the day. So that's something that I'm gonna stay away from, but when it comes to takes, they can get as hot as that.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane to me that the place offers the sauce or the rub or whatever. Yeah, it is
dry rub,
and it's like, don't order this. Like, we sell it, but you should not order
it. He's also like a pacey white guy too. So yeah, like there might have been a little bit of something there too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you can handle this, brother. Like, let's not.
Yeah. So we're gonna dial it up take style here. This is all about the NFL draft. It's of course centered around our campers. I don't have any like offensive tackle predictions takes here, but we are going to talk specifically about the draft and how it could unfold, whether it's a player goes here, trade that might happen, things of that nature. That's what we're exploring today. And from there, Colin, might be some opportunities to talk about some players or some situations regarding the NFL draft, because it is only just over 2 weeks away at this point. So
unreal. Last year we called Bijan's exact draft position.
We
on this episode. So
yeah, let's talk about when we did that and not when my lemon pepper take was that CJ Stroud goes first overall, because that was my layup and I biffed it.
Maybe the Panthers should have been listening.
Yeah. So let's kick it off. Like I just said, lemon pepper starts the show. It is it's a great wing flavor. You're not there for the spice though. You're there for the experience. So this is, like I said, theoretically a layup. This is something that is most likely going to happen, but as I just proved, it's not a guarantee. So Colin, start us off with your lemon pepper take.
All right. It's going to sound lofty when I say it, but we're going to explain as we go. Caleb Williams will break every Bears single season passing record year one. So, wow, that's crazy. Okay. They were set 28 years ago by Eric Kramer. 38 yards and 29 touchdowns. So Caleb Williams walks into an offense, you know, ready made with Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, you know, Swift and Cole Kmet, like pretty decent weapons. The number 9 overall pick also. They've been building this offensive line, and now they can bring in a quarterback that they trust, that they want to distribute the ball and let him throw it around the yard. And I don't think it's really controversial to say that Caleb Williams has the opportunity to be the best Bears quarterback of all time, but I went a little easier with the lemon pepper take and just did the year one, he's going to break their records.
Yeah, up front, that feels like, what, this is lemon pepper? But like, you hear those numbers and you're like, man, this is a franchise that has been hungry for star power at the quarterback position for a very, 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 very long time. Maybe forever. Maybe this will be, when it's said and done, the best quarterback in franchise history. But I think it is a safe bet to say that he is, you know, already a player that you can see eclipsing those numbers. And I do love how it's no longer a question of what at the top. It's we get to talk about the rest of it. We get to talk about the experience. There was no manufacture drama this year about the first overall pick. We wondered if that would happen. It seemed like it might have been on that track with Drake May at once upon a time, but I think people quickly just put an end to that, and it doesn't seem like Ryan Poles has been too keen to keep anybody off the scent either, because why would you when you're staring this player in the face?
And both the Bears single season passing record and touchdown record are the lowest in the NFL.
Wow.
So it's a low bar to clear.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why this is the lemon pepper take.
So Caleb, if you don't break it, that's the problem.
Then we're concerned.
Yes. All right. Well, I'm going to stay at the top of this draft class with my lemon pepper take as well. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the first wide receiver drafted in 2 weeks' time. There has been a growing number of people, you know, stoking the Malik Nabers fire, and I get it, man. These are two amazing talents at this position. But if I'm thinking ahead, if I'm thinking what's gonna happen, I just don't see a situation in which Marvin Harrison Jr. is not the first wide receiver taken in this draft, because I think he's the best wide receiver in this draft. He's got the hype, he's got the talent, and I think when it's said and done, he should be the pick atop the draft for the Arizona Cardinals. But maybe we'll explore those takes later in the program.
This is hopefully a signed, sealed, delivered thing. But like you said, there has been many teams have Malik Nabers higher on their board than Marvin Harrison Jr. And, you know, there's been even some Romo Odunze talk as of late that I think is mostly fueled by the reception perception, you know, stoking. And I think that's mostly the fantasy community. I don't think that's really like NFL circles, but it might be. I mean, Romo Odunze, very good player. So I think that Marvin should be and will be the number one wide receiver off the board. And it's a good entry-level wing right there.
So we got the entry levels down. We got a nice little flavor on top here, but now we're gonna
dip that in ranch.
No ranch needed. No ranch needed for the next wing, unless you're just a ranch fan like me, because I'm dipping my honey barbecue wings in ranch for the experience. Is that a hot take?
Yeah, that's gross.
Really?
All right, continue.
All right,
honey.
Sue me. All right, I like ranch. Sorry.
Hey, all right. Dip your fries in it.
I do. I literally do.
I know you do.
All right. Honey barbecue take. Dial it up for us.
My honey barbecue take is Michael Penix is...
Here we go.
QB3.
Here we go.
So this is a result, not a draft position. So Michael Penix ends up being higher at the end of the season than Jaden Daniels. So this will be Caleb Williams 1, Drake May 2, Michael Penix 3. So I need to admit something.
Okay.
I need to be vulnerable for a minute here.
Okay.
I let capital B big media get in my head. And we've done some searching, this extended time between episodes. It's given me some time to think and reflect and, you know, watch a little extra tape. And, man, we're back. So here we are. Michael Penix, good quarterback, lands in, like, Las Vegas, ends up starting. Jaden Daniels struggles in Washington. And, you know, we're looking back and we're like, man, Michael Penix, we should have seen it coming.
So when you say you're back, what does that mean? Where is Penix ranked for you right now?
So Penix is, I don't know if he's overtaken Jaden Daniels officially, but I think
in your fantasy rankings, to be clear,
I think that there's a world where Penix has a better rookie season than Jaden Daniels. But Jaden Daniels has a longer term impact in with his tools and his upside. So I have Daniels higher than Penix, but I think Penix can be better year one.
Yeah. So, I mean, to put my cards on the table, because we haven't gotten to talk a lot about the quarterbacks this year outside of rankings. And I don't even know if it was clear when we did it at that point in time. Jaden Daniels is my number 3 fantasy quarterback in this draft. He is my number 4 NFL quarterback in this draft. Michael Penix is my number 3 quarterback in terms of NFL grading, which, man, I got to tell you, there is maybe no player right now that is more... There is more division about than Michael Penix Jr. I feel like you either have him as your quarterback 3, like you are pounding the table, like, why are we forgetting about this guy? Or you are like shoving him like deep into your rankings and saying this is like a fringe, you know, round 2, round 3 sort of a quarterback. Like, this is not even close to a first rounder. I've seen a lot of both of those. So it's going to be really interesting to find out where Penix is drafted in the draft coming up here. I that's where I thought you were going initially, but you're saying at the end of the season, when we are sorting through the aftermath, that Michael Penix will be more highly regarded at that point in time than Jaden Daniels.
I think that we're also going to have a moment where we're like, you know, Penix was more pro ready. He landed in a better draft spot because he's going to go. I mean, there's a wide range of where he's expected to go. He could go as high as like 12. He could go as low as like a high second round pick. Who knows at this point, but he's probably going to end up in a better landing spot than like Jaden Daniels is in, and he may not get as much help. Like, if Michael Penix is on the Raiders with Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers, like, he's basically doing what he was doing at Washington, throwing to Romo Dunze and, you know, Jalen McMillan and Jalen Polk. Like, those are NFL guys, and he's going to go in and be throwing to like a real NFL wide receiver core, and we'll look back and be like, you know what, maybe we should have saw that this guy who was a distributor, like, yeah, there's the injury stuff and the age stuff, but guy plays pro ready football and apparently he can move around a little bit. So I don't know.
I like how you slipped in that very casual Davante Adams Romo Dunze comp there. That was nice.
Yep.
All right, well, I'm staying with quarterbacks with my honey barbecue take as well. Mine is that Drake May is the second overall pick in the NFL draft. This is now, and we might be at a point where Honey Barbecue is like on the lighter end for this sort of take because of how prevalent the Jaden Daniels conversation has been with the Commanders. And then you have like Brian Kelly at the pro day, like slipping out, you know, hey, he's going to be great in Washington or whatever he said. And everybody's like, oh, he said it. It's confirmed. I don't know if it was as, you know, blatant as it seemed like with that quote. That could have been a number. There could have been a number of reasons why he said it that way. I don't think that was any confirmation. And honestly, I'm just choosing to believe at this point that the NFL sees what I and you and many other people see in Drake May, which is certainly not a perfect player, but man, this is not a like project quarterback. I mean, he is in the sense of like there's work to do here, but he's an extremely young player that's shown you so much already. He has so much potential, so much upside, and the player that you get week one is not this like, you know, we cannot throw him out there. You know, that's not what this is. So I am choosing to believe that Washington understands that and that they are going to roll the dice on a player here that I think still has the sort of upside to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, I think people are overthinking Drake May a lot, me included, where we are like in the season looking at Drake May and saying, oh my God, look at the arm he has, look at the arm angles, look at the mobility, look at the rushing. Like, he can do a little bit of everything. Yeah, he has some mistakes that he makes, but he's also like a really young quarterback in comparison to guys like Jaden Daniels and Michael Penix. Like, both of those guys are fifth-year guys. And, like, he has all of the tools and plenty of upside. So I don't know. Like I said, I think things are getting overthought a little bit with Drake May, which happens all the time in this draft cycle. I mean, we get from December or January until March, and it's like, you know, 90 days of talking about these guys, and you're like, well, maybe, you know, the guy, it's like, all right, get back to where we came from. And nothing has really changed except for what you're hearing and, you know, more and more thinking. So maybe we just got to get back to where we were and say, hey, Drake May, really good football player. Maybe he should just be the second overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's a part of the process every year. I mean, if you do this long enough, like as a hobby or casually, like you're consuming the content along with everybody else. So you have to constantly remind yourself, like, this is what I saw. This is what I gleaned from watching this player. Like, there's been a lot of months that separate me diving into Drake May, talking about Drake May right here and right now, and all of the discourse that's happened in between then. And so it's a balance of, I don't want, you know, my opinion to get clouded by that of others, but I also, you also don't want to stay, you know, complacent. You want to continue to think and to analyze your own, like reflect on your own decisions. Drake May is one that I've just never wavered on. Like, I've never felt insecurity about the player. So I think it's been fun from a dramatic side of things to like hear the back and forth and listen to the discourse. But I really just think in 2 weeks' time, it's going to go the way that it seemed like it should have gone all along, which is Caleb 1 and Drake 2. And then we'll find out after that. I have no idea what to expect after that, honestly.
Yeah.
All right, that's Honey Barbecue, which means it is time for Old Faithful, the classic, the goat, the buffalo wing. Colin, this is a big take here. So what?
You
want to
talk
about
classic?
Yeah.
You want to talk about old school? You want to talk about old reliable? Braylon Allen's RB1.
Oh.
So we're going back to what I just said with the Drake May take. You know what? What's changed between the end of the season and now. I mean, we watched some more tape. Yes, we listened to what people are saying. We're consuming all these draft guides. I mean, The Beast comes out, 370 pages of draft content, and people are saying Braylon Allen's going. I don't care what people are saying. Braylon Allen is my RB1. Braylon Allen is a freak athlete. Braylon Allen is 19 years old. He's 20 years old. Physically imposing. He can get his fumble stuff under control and run a little harder at the next level. Braylon Allen, in the right system, is going to blow away the rest of these guys, and it's going to look like a goddamn steal when you're looking back at Dynasty Drafts next year.
I love you standing on that hill, man. Plant that flag. Own it, Braylon Allen. I mean, and here's the really interesting part about that, and I'm going to single out something that you just said. The right scheme. That is such a lost part of the entire process of the draft, because these rankings happen in a vacuum. Like, this is all done in a vacuum based on the players, you know, the tape from college, the skills, the ability, you know, the testing. At the end of the day, if the player finds the right fit and the right home to maximize their skills, then
that's all that matters.
That changes everything. Yeah. Because it's like, would I, you know, if Braylon Allen's my RB4 or whatever, 5, wherever he is on my board right now, and he goes to a scheme in which he's going to get touches, in which he's going to, you know, run the way that he is built to run and the way that he's comfortable running, then that's, it's not like, oh, he's my RB5. Like, I got, you know, there's fluidity at that point in time. So that's what I keep saying. And it is a cop out, but I've been saying it all along. This running back class will not really be determined from a fantasy perspective until after the NFL draft. This is the sort of running back class where the rankings almost go out the window after the draft. Like, you might have a couple guys at the top that you're like, yeah, the talent is just different with these guys. The rest of it is going to sort itself out based on where they are and what they project to be.
Yeah, with running backs in general, landing spot is so crucial. And like you said, in a class like this where there's no clear number one guy, there's no, you know, dynasty darling, Braylon Allen could very easily seize that spot. And we're talking about getting running backs at the end of the first round in the second round of your dynasty draft in your rookie drafts. And that's going to, it's just like, if you hit on one, it's going to feel like such a steal, because running backs are such a scarce position in fantasy in general, and especially in dynasty, where there's just not a lot of really good young running backs. So if you just hit on a rookie in like the second round, it's just like finding free money.
That's what I hope to do. I like finding free money in my dynasty rookie drafts. And here's a player that might just be one of the best values of our upcoming dynasty rookie drafts, but he might not be as much of a value if this happens. My Buffalo take is that Ladd McConkey is a first round pick in the NFL draft. I have been talking sort of like covertly or suspiciously over the last few weeks that I have some McConkey takes brewing, and I'm bringing them to the pod today. I've been thinking a lot about the tier of wide receivers that starts in my eyes after Brian Thomas Jr. and A.D. Mitchell. We get the big three. We get those two. At that point in time, what does the wide receiver group look like? And I just keep coming back to the fact that I don't think there is a wide receiver after that group that I want more than Ladd McConkey. I love the floor and I love the ceiling. There is so much with this player that I feel like is just safe, where there's some projection that's needed with a lot of the other guys in this tier. And the guys that I'm referring to are some mainstays here at Camp Dynasty. Players like Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin. I could throw Xavier Worthy into this tier for me. Jalen Polk is maybe on the edge of teetering on the edge of this tier for me, but Ladd McConkey is the player that I think when if I'm on a board, if I'm on the clock and it's draft night and those six receivers are gone and Brock Bowers is gone, I don't know if there's a player I want more than McConkey. And I think the NFL is going to value his skills very highly as well. And I think he is in play for that end of the first range where you have wide receiver needy teams, or you have teams at the top of the second that need a wide receiver that might be willing to jump a few spots to get the player that they really like at the end of that, at the end of the round. So Ladd McConkey, first round pick.
You do these mock drafts all off season and you get to like pick 26 to 32 and 25 to 32. And you're like, well, who's taking a wide receiver here? And there's 3-4 teams that could do it. And especially now that Buffalo like sent off Stephon Diggs, like, hey, they need a wide receiver also, even more than they did before. Because we were talking about Buffalo needing a receiver before they got rid of Diggs. And, man, Ladd makes a lot of sense as, either a high upside wide receiver 2 or a wide receiver 1 in the right scheme with the right support. Like, a guy that can just separate and run after the catch. Like, what's up with that? Why not? Just take the safe guy. And there's guys probably with higher ceilings, but there's not a lot of guys with a higher floor outside of the top three than Ladd McConkey. So I don't see why not. If you're looking to get a player that's safe that might have as high of an upside as these other guys, but has probably the highest floor out of any of them, sure. I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, when you just the ability to separate the yards after the catch, the athleticism, some versatility with the player, though, you know, he probably lives inside, but, you know, it's like we said, it's not, he might play from the slot, but he's not a slot player in the sense that he's like this, you know, he's a big play threat is what he is. But he's more than that as well. So I don't know. I think Ladd McConkey is my wide receiver 6 in this draft. That's what I'm saying here. So we'll find out how the NFL feels about him. But it's time to really crank it up a notch because we get past the Buffalo. We're in the middle of the chart right now. Now we got to think about it a little bit. Like, am I ready for a Ty Curry wing? Do I want that experience right now?
What do you think of Curry?
I love Curry.
Yeah, me too.
Big Curry fan. Will order Ty Curry wings. And then, really, this is probably my line. It's like I'll order the Ty Curry.
Spend some time on the toilet after.
Yeah. you live with the consequences. But, all right, Ty Curry.
So, we're at a point where there seems to be a presumptive consensus number 4 wide receiver. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Who is that?
Brian Thomas Jr.
That's right. I don't know if Brian Thomas Jr. is a real NFL wide receiver.
Wait. Are you telling me that your take here is that Brian Thomas Jr. is a bust in the making?
Correct. Brian Thomas Jr. has all the makings of a guy that thrived in a college scheme, and it's just not going to work in the NFL. This is a guy that runs a very shallow variety of routes. He's hyper athletic. He's good at the catch point. You know, he's really fast. He can run away from defenders, and that might all be true, but Gabe Davis is all that too. And we're looking at what he's become NFL.
Hold on a second though.
Yeah.
Can you remind me what Gabe Davis ran in the 40-yard dash?
I have no idea.
I believe he was a 4-5 player.
Okay. They're not running track. They're playing football.
Okay, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, I understand that going against consensus here, and that's why we're at a Thai curry wing. It's supposed to be a little bit spicy. You're not supposed to.
I'm getting a little spicy over
there. Yeah, your face is getting a little red. You're seething a little bit over there. That's all right. I just feel like a lot of people are comping him to, like, DK Metcalf and players of that ilk. And I think that they're right in terms of his weaknesses, but I think his strengths fall a little short of what, like, those players look like. And he's going to end up getting pretty high draft capital is what it sounds like. And he's a presumptive number four. And I think that there's a little to be desired with Brian Thomas Jr., a little more than people are letting on. And I think they kind of have rose-colored glasses on with this guy a little bit.
I mean, that's fair. I feel like I'm one of those people. Like, I feel like I, because I've said it many times, like, this is not a perfect player. Like, this is a player that is very clearly a step, two steps down from the top group. Like, this is your wide receiver four, but, like, we're now in a different solar system in terms of what you're getting in week one. But over time, it's just like, man, you really start to love what the player can be. And this is the trap, because the player is good. And in my opinion, he's already good. And I've called him a high floor player before. But you start to think about what more can he be as a 21-year-old that just had his breakout year in the SEC. As a number two wide receiver, but you know who else was one of those? Justin Jefferson. So the whole argument...
He looked just like Justin Jefferson.
Comp? Why didn't I do that on this or that? That's the real comp. Silly. But I have seen a lot... Now I'm the big one that I've seen with Brian Thomas Jr. is T. Higgins, which I don't hate that. I don't necessarily disagree with it in the same way that I disagreed with the Quentin Johnston T. Higgins one, because that was like, could not be more different than what the player is or should be. This one is at least like similar in the sense that he's going to play the same sort of receiver. He's going to win in a lot of the ways that T. Higgins wins in the NFL right now. What the problem that I have with it is, like, T. Higgins was a almost one of one contested catch monster. Like, some of T. Higgins' catches in college were like truly breathtaking. Like, you saw a player that was like on a different plane of existence at the catch point than most other college receivers. Brian Thomas Jr., I don't feel that way about. But it's not to say that he can't continue to become, you know, a more of a threat in that area. He's already solid, but like, that's where I kind of have a hang up, and that's how I go more to the DK Metcalf side of things. But even that's imperfect, as all comps are. The bottom line here is that this is another player that is a little bit divided. And I think he's very clearly number four. I feel like he's got, you know, all the potential in the world, but I don't think you're alone in thinking that, you know, there's a probability that he just is this really big, fast player that never takes the next steps.
And I'm not trying to say like he'll be out of the NFL, because I've consistently said like Brian Thomas has a role as an NFL player, and he always will. I just don't know if he's going to be wide receiver four in this class.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And this is the sort of class where, I mean, with the volume of names, that order, that go back to the Michael Penix conversation. We go to the end of this year. Where are we? It's not going to look the same. I can almost guarantee that.
I'm excited for you to hear my mango habanero take.
Okay, I won't go any further. I won't spoil anything. All right, Ty Curry for me. We're finally going to talk about a running back. You already talked about Jesus, Braylon Allen. Man. I'm sorry.
Braylon Allen erasure already.
I'm sorry.
I just pounded the table as the guy's my RB1.
You know what? That's on me, but I'm talking about my RB1 right now, and that's Trey Benson. My Ty Curry take is that Trey Benson is a second round NFL draft pick. So this is up here on the spice scale because I don't see it ever. And no one talks about it. And there are some people who have Trey Benson as like their RB1 in the class, and they would be like, well, yeah, he should be a second round. I think right now we don't have a lot of reason to believe that he will be. But I think when you consider his, you know, what we saw in Indianapolis from him, we consider, you know, kind of the skill set that he brings, the athleticism and the skill set that he brings, it's just kind of different than a lot of the other backs in this class. A lot of the other backs in this class are older. Trey Benson, one of the younger backs in this group as well. So I think there's enough reason where if a team at the end of round two sees an opportunity to grab a running back, maybe Jonathan Brooks is already off the board, maybe it's another running back, I still think there's a chance we could see two running backs go in round two, and Trey Benson could be one of them.
I feel like at some point, and I've mentioned this a lot, and I don't want to like keep repeating it, but teams eventually are going to fill needs, and teams eventually are going to just be like, hey, man, we need a running back, and we think Trey Benson's good. Like, he's our number one running back on the board. Now, maybe he might not be their number one player on the board, and you can argue BPA versus value versus positional, like, whatever. But if there's a team that has him number one on their board at running back and they need a running back, I could see them going after him in the second round. It's not like what I have him graded as, and we both know that already, but I don't think that this is like an insane thing to say. And if he gets second round capital, like I mentioned with Braylon Allen, like, I think you got to spike him in your rankings. I think like that gives him a boost because we don't have very strong set in stone rankings on this running back class. And if the NFL is telling you, hey, we're willing to, you know, take him with pick 60, then we're going to be like, oh, all right, you have my attention, Trey Benson. So I think that would be, definitely make it a little, him a little more interesting and, you know, maybe change my mind a little bit.
The other thing here is that the NFL draft usually gets pretty weird with running backs. Like, unless you have guys like last year, it gets pretty weird. I mean, let's go back to 2020, maybe, whatever the Jonathan Taylor year was, 2019, Clyde Edwards-Helaire going 32. Nobody sees that. Nobody sees that. And then it gets even weirder the deeper into the draft you go. Round two, round three, suddenly you're, you know, what you thought about a running back class kind of goes out the window. And a lot of times, at least from what I can remember, there's, you know, you get picks like Tyrion Davis Price in the third, and everyone's like, why did they do that? And then he's like out of the league. So it's like, you know, I feel like running back gets unpredictable the deeper into the draft you get. And for a class like this, where there's little consensus, where the first back's not supposed to even really go until around pick 50, the order could shock a lot of people. I'm prepared to be shocked by it. So why can't it be Trey Benson?
The 2020 NFL draft. 2020. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, pick 32. DeAndre Swift, pick 35. Jonathan Taylor, 41. Cam Akers, 52, and AJ Dillon, 62.
Yep, there it is.
All
in right there
in the top two rounds.
AJ Dillon, second round pick.
Wild.
All right, it's time to really get hot up in here, as Nelly said.
That is what he said. So hot.
We have two flavors left to go. These are both flavors that I will never order in a wing setting. The first is mango habanero, which does have a good flavor for like 2 seconds, and then I can't breathe. So just but so all right, I'm very excited to hear this one. What is your mango habanero take?
It's not that good of a wide receiver class.
What?
We got three guys. After that, got a bunch of role players. We got Brian Thomas, who I just talked about, deep threat, big, fast, cool. We got Ladd McConkey, you know, pretty small guy, might have to move into the slot. Don't know if he's going to be a high volume guy. We got A.D. Mitchell, 1 year of production in college. He's a good route runner, but there's obviously, you know, some effort questions. There's some attitude things, and we don't know if he can actually be a real productive guy. Keon Coleman, I mean, I could go through the laundry list of things. Ricky Pearsall, I don't know. Is he going to be a high-volume NFL player? Xavier Worthy, we have our concerns about his size. We have our concerns about, you know. And then you're getting down in this list of Troy Franklin, another guy that's not making contested catches. He's getting knocked off his spot. His weight is clearly an issue. And then you're getting into guys who it's going to be a coin flip regardless. So, yeah, you got Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Romo Odunze, but they're buoying a class that has a lot of questions.
Okay. How much of what you just said do you actually believe?
Hey, man. Mango habanero. Spicy take. Sorry if you can't handle it. I can see you. Your mouth is watering a little bit. I can see you're going through it. You can't even speak because it's so spicy. You know, it's festering in the mouth.
I'm just lingering on the fact that you have essentially gaslit me and everybody else for 7 months talking about this wide receiver class, and now we get to April and it's fine. It's okay.
Yeah, we have like three incredible wide receiver prospects. And then what else? A lot of guys that we're not going to be sure about for a long time.
That's what they always say. We do this every single year. Not every year, because not every class is this good. But I'll take us back to the year in which, what year was it?
I'm not in your head. You got to come up with it on your own.
Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Brandon Ayuk.
I think that's 2021. It wasn't longer than that.
2021.
2021 feels right.
2021, yeah. That feels right. So, was it 2019?
Devontae Smith was 2021. Jalen Waddle, Ja'Marr Chase.
Oh, it had to be 2020.
We were just talking about 2020. The COVID class, man.
Yeah, that was the
Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because that was a class where you had all these names. You had all these names, and it was like Jeudy and CeeDee, these are like the top guys. Like, these are the no doubters. And then you had this collection of receivers after that, and it was players like Justin Jefferson, T. Higgins, and various other names that I will not list because they were busts. But the way that Justin Jefferson and T. Higgins were talked about in that class were, they're complementary pieces, they're high floor. In the case of Jefferson, it was high floor, low ceiling, target hog, and then what happens? So why can't that happen for a player later in this group? Why not? Why can't we get the best wide receiver of our generation from the later part of this class?
Because he's already in the league.
Okay.
Justin Jefferson's already there. Are you going to bring up one outlier as the filibuster for my entire argument here?
I'm going to keep filibustering all night if I have to.
I mean, we're talking about like Adonai Mitchell, and you're comparing him to Justin Jefferson. Like, I understand, like, obviously one or two of these guys is going to hit, but I'm just saying, like, it feels way more uncertain than a lot of people are letting on. I think people are like, hey, this is an excellent wide receiver class, and there's going to be, you know, six guys in the first round. And I don't feel like we should be that confident about this.
So, okay, here's my real response to this, because this is a good take in the sense that it's a good conversation to have, because I think when we're talking about fantasy, we get a little over our skis about depth. Because I can sit here all day and say this wide receiver group, it goes 25 deep with guys that I think are good. It goes 20 deep with players that I think are really good. And that is just an unreasonable amount of players to expect to have significant roles in the NFL. So I agree with you on that front, that we can sit here all day and say this class is amazing, as top-end talent, it's so deep. It's not going to mean that, oh, hey, my third round pick where I'm going to take, you know,
Johnny Wilson
or Jalen McMillan or any of these names. It doesn't mean that I'm getting a slam dunk just because the player grades out well. Like, it goes back to the running back conversation. It's a fit thing. It's a role thing. These players have to find the right homes and they have to be used in the right ways. I said this a while ago now, maybe like about a month ago. This is going to be an amazing group of talent for the NFL. For fantasy purposes, we might get like six or seven guys. So I kind of agree with you in that. If that's where you were leading to, then I agree with you that we will not get 20 fantasy relevant receivers out of this class. We might not even get 10. We might not even get 10.
And so, and that's what it boils down to is we have, you know, guys 4 through 7 in a tier. And then it's like, you can do whatever you want with all the rest of the guys. And I wouldn't be mad about it. And maybe that's true, but I just think that things are very murky and there's only so many passes thrown in an NFL game, in an NFL season, and things are not going to work out the way you think they are. So we're talking about these guys as slam dunks, as round one picks, and I'm here to throw cold water on rookie fever.
Somebody has to do it, man. I'm not brave enough.
I don't want to be the wet blanket, but here we are.
I get it. Isn't it kind of sad to think, like, statistically, some of these top players will be busts?
Yeah.
Like,
one of the top three guys is going to be a bust.
It's upsetting to me.
It's just like, it's just not realistic to say, like, yeah, three wide receivers are going to go top 10 and all of them are going to be Hall of Famers. And obviously that's an exaggeration, but like one of them is probably going to be okay.
Okay.
Like 800 yards a year. All right.
This isn't where we were supposed to go here,
hey.
But we keep it real. We keep it real. All right. Let's have some fun. Mango Habanero, first predicted trade. The Vikings have been a very popular trade-up candidate, obviously, because they acquired a second first-round pick, which feels like a dynasty move mm-hmm. in which you acquire more assets to try to make your big move up the board. Who are they going to trade with? That is the question. Will it be 3? Will it be 4? Will it be 5?
Will it be 6?
Will it be 6? I think right now a popular spot is 4. And earlier when I did my lemon pepper Marvin Harrison Jr., I said he's going to Arizona. I don't think they're trading out. I don't think they should. I don't think they will. I know.
Did you see the latest report?
What is it?
They want 3 firsts because they're planning on taking Marvin.
Yes, I did see that. So that is fuel to my fire. It's something that I've thought for a while now that they do not want to move out of that pick. Because why would you? This is one of your biggest team needs. It's a potentially, you know, franchise changing talent at the position. You can't go much further down the board and still get Neighbors or Odunze. So just take Marvin at 4 and forget about it. So in that case, I don't think that trade happens the way that a lot of folks seem to believe that it could because of what happened last year with the Cardinals. But five seems like the spot. So my mango habanero take is that the Chargers will trade down this board. They will acquire 11 and 23. They may send a small bit back with five to even that out. Details-wise, I tried to work this out. I know there's going to be a quarterback tax involved, so I don't think they're going to get – the Vikings will get much back with five, but I think they could get like a day three pick maybe potentially in there. Whatever that ends up being, the Chargers walk away 11 and 23. And this is why it's a mango habanero take. I'm not just predicting the trade. I'm predicting the player that they take at number 11, and it's Brock Bowers.
Ooh. All right.
The match made in heaven, our perfect match. It seems as though five might be rich, so why not move down and go to 11 and get Brock Bowers? Yes, the Jets theoretically are in play. That is a danger in this move, but I still believe that Bowers will be there for them at 11, and they will make that pick. Harbaugh wants to get bigger, wants to establish the run. Everybody reads linemen. Well, guess what? You can take Brock Bowers here. You get a pass catcher and an added benefit in the run game, and then you can come back at 23 and get a tackle. Boom. Done.
So Joe Horitz, his first move, not his first move, but his first big move as Chargers GM.
Yep.
Is to do what Monty Austin-Fort did.
Exactly.
With the Cardinals. And trade back, get a piece. And it feels like, all right, I'm working through my thoughts here. I'm just going to think out loud. Yep. So the Broncos have Sean Payton. They obviously want to win now. It feels like things are moving quickly and it's not working. Because they want to, like, microwave something. I'm talking about, like, teams. You know, you make a good meal. You know, you want to put it in the oven. You want to let it cook for a while. You want to let the heat go, get through. You know what? The Broncos are trying to microwave the thing. It's cold in the middle. It's not turning out good. You know, it's hot on the outside. The plate's hot. It's a disaster. Chargers, take this. Put it in the oven. Let things bake. We get two good players. You know, we get 11. And they already have a quarterback, so that makes things easier. But they can be a little more reasonable. They can take their time. You know, not jump on the, you know, Malik Nabers or the Romo Dunze and say, hey, we'll wait. We'll get the other tier one weapon. We'll get Brock Bowers. We'll let everybody else fight over quarterbacks and wide receivers in the top 10. We'll simply gain another first-round pick. And still get great value here at 11. I like it.
Yeah, and the caveat here is, like, they don't necessarily have to be trading down for Bowers. Like, no. In my scenario, they get him, and that's the beauty of it, is that they get their perfect match. But if they're worried about the Jets or whatever, like, you can still take a tackle at 11, and you could take a wide receiver at 23, and now we're cooking again. So, I mean, I love this, actually, this scenario for LA. I think this, the trade in general, I feel like is not likely, but I think it's very much in the cards that they would do something like this, and I think it matches up perfectly. I think if Arizona says, nope, we're not doing business with you, we want Marvin, okay, then the quarterback trade-up spot becomes five, and I think the Chargers would be keen on doing it.
I like it. I think that the team will have patience. The you know, it's a fresh staff. They're going to have time to, you know, let themselves work. They're not on a strict time schedule yet. I mean, they're on the Herbert schedule, but he's still young, so they have some time to build around him, and they need as much ammo as they can get because they have a roster that's turning over.
All right. It's time. I can't feel my face, but oh wait, here come the Diablo wings, Camp Dynasty's own proprietary mouth sore inducing hot sauce.
2.8 million Scoville.
Yeah.
And the Diablo ones.
That's like about 2.879999 too many for me. But the Diablo wing, a thing of myth, something that almost doesn't even feel real. But there's a chance, Colin. So, with that said, your Diablo take for this draft.
What wide receiver did I not mention when I said this wide receiver class is going to be bad?
You did not mention
Malachi Corley.
Oh, God.
My Diablo take is that Malachi Corley will be the most productive year one wide receiver.
Need a little ranch with that one. Yeah. We need a lot of ranch. Can we get the gallon jug out?
Get the milk, get the ice cream, get the milkshake.
So when you were in the lab, we're cooking this take up, do you have a spot in mind? Is there a spot where you're like, Malachi Corley in this uniform is the best and most productive wide receiver?
So the first place I went was Buffalo. They wait after round one, and they take him maybe round two, and they use him as their number one wide receiver paired up with Josh Allen, and he is just hoovering targets, running after the catch, that kind of thing. And, you know, maybe the top three guys are really good, but, you know, maybe they're sitting a little less than you might think, and then Corley just, you know, squeezes up there and says, hey, you know, I have 900 yards after the catch this season. And it's something just outrageous ends up happening and ends up being just a hyper productive receiver in a room that is lacking. And maybe that's not specifically Buffalo, but that's just kind of what you envision. You envision him, you know, the ideal scenario, going to a team that doesn't have an established number one wide receiver, going to a team that has an elite quarterback, and, you know, there are targets to be had there. You have a guy like Shakur that can be, you know, take some of those deep targets. You have, you know, Curtis Samuel, who maybe fills a similar role to Corley, but then you can make Corley do things that he might not be, that he might not have done at Western Kentucky because of the quarterback limitations that they had, and he can be a real wide receiver running real routes and then, you know, do what he does after he, you know, uses that good separation that he's been, that he shows flashes of, but never really got a chance to really shine. So, Corley, man, love him more and more every day.
It's your guy.
It is.
It's your guy in this class. That is for sure. And, you know, why not? Why not Malachi Corley? I mean, that's goes back to our conversation, man. Never quite goes how you think. And I think with this top three group, I feel like it's pretty set in stone, pretty safe. After that, could be anybody. Could be anybody. You're one. And we'll be talking about, you know, X player Malachi Corley having, you know, dynasty wide receiver 19 one value or something. Well, Puka Nacua is a thing, man. The rules are, they're broken. There are no rules anymore. So,
and this could be like, you know, Patriots. This could be Broncos. This could be Chargers. Like, there's a lot of scenarios where, I mean, there's a lot of teams with quarterbacks that just don't have, like, a real wide receiver group. Talk about, like, the Jags, who add on – they have a lot of wide receiver twos, but they don't have, like, a wide receiver one. And I don't know if Corley is a wide receiver one in the NFL. But the fact that we don't know, like, he could be. We know that Christian Kirk isn't. We know that Gabe Davis isn't, right? I don't know.
I'm smiling because you just teed me up so well without even knowing it.
Here we are.
Perfect segue to my Diablo take, which is about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Because a common, I can't even call it a common match anymore, but it was our perfect match. Brian Thomas Jr. to the Jaguars at 17. That doesn't feel like a thing that's consuming an unhealthy amount of mock drafts. You're not seeing it anymore, so therefore it can't be real because nobody's telling you it is. I still think it's very much in play. I think it's, you might even call it likely. I think it's a very, very good fit, a perfect player for this offense, an offense that needs talent at the wide receiver position. You just outlined it perfectly. But Colin, I would not tell you that Brian Thomas Jr. at 17 is a Diablo take. And if you can't get wide receiver help, if Calvin Ridley's out the door and the best you got in is Gabe Davis and you got Trevor Lawrence and you need to figure things out fast, you got to make a move.
Yep. I like where this is going.
Here's a trade that nobody's talking about that I guarantee you've never heard anywhere else. The Chicago Bears at pick number 9. That is a prime trade back spot, in my opinion, because right now the common thing is that a wide receiver falls to 9, the fall stops with the Bears. But we got Keenan Allen. We got DJ Moore. We can get help later in this class. But what we don't have if we're Chicago is a lot of draft capital. So why don't we just trade down, accumulate some assets, and let a team like Jacksonville come up for Rome Odunze? Because when Rome slides to 9, all of these teams are going to start calling. Every single one of them, I guarantee it. The Bills, we could throw any of them in there. The Steelers, get aggressive. You need a receiver. Go get this guy at number 9. The Jaguars have the leg up because they're at 17. We can give 17 and their second round pick, which is 49, I believe. That's about right on the value chart. And it's maybe a little rich for the Jags, who do have other needs. We got to get this defense figured out too. But man, Trevor Lawrence to Rome Odunze feels like a connection that Jags fans are going to love for a very long time. It's something that can take this offense to the level that it did not quite reach with Calvin Ridley. It was close, but Rome can take them to that next notch. So let's make it happen. Trent Baalke, do one goddamn good thing in your life and make this trade.
How about we just trade for number 4 and give Marvin Harrison Jr. We're shelling out the capital. We're moving up a ton of spots. Let's trade the 2024 pick, the 2025 pick. Throw Josh Allen in there. I don't know. He just signed the extension. Cardinals get an edge rusher with, you know, a star to help out Kyler. Hey, why not? But no, this is good. I like the idea. 17-9 is feasible for the Jags. And if Odunze is there at 9, I think the Bears, like Brian Poole's phone is going to be ringing off the hook. And a lot of teams are going to be like, man, we need to get this guy. Because I don't think if he goes to 10, I don't think the Jets are going to pass on him. So I think 9 is a sweet spot. And I could very well see this. And like you said, you don't see the Jags trading up, making big moves. And this is when you kind of got to do it. When you have your franchise quarterback and you want him to prove it, well, get him some tools to prove it. That's what has been shown to work across the league. You get your young quarterback weapons and give him an environment where he can succeed, where he is likely to succeed, and see if he can do it. And so far, they have not done that with Trevor Lawrence. Year 1, disaster. Year 2, it was a lot better. Year 3, it was so-so. It was like hit and miss. There was some good, some bad. And, I mean, even if you look at who the Jags were last year, look at all of the unrealized opportunity that they had in the red zone. You flip like half of those outcomes and you're looking at a completely different season for that team. And Romo Dunze is the type of guy that'll help you flip half of those outcomes, especially in the red zone. That is the guy.
It's going to be crazy. That's what I know. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. And that's why something like this might just surprise us all on draft night, because what do we know about this class? There's quarterbacks to be had. There's teams that want to get up for them. There's wide receivers to be had, but we only have so many spots for them. So I can't wait. 2 weeks from actually the day that this is hitting the airwaves, 2 weeks on the date till the NFL draft. So we've got big trades. We've got the wide receiver class sucks. We've got all of it, man. It's flavors of takes, baby.
It's good to get some of this off your chest when you're like trying to be right all the time. Sometimes you lose who you really are and what you really believe, you know?
Amen. And it's perfect timing then that we have to face the music, because next week, Colin, it's final pre-draft rankings. So all this flip-flopping and re-watching and moving things, it all stops next week. We got to put it together. I got to lock Ladd McConkey in.
I got to lock Malachi Corley in.
We got to lock him in, man. So it's getting really real now. Pre-draft, we know that things will change after the draft, but we go into this draft, these are the players that we are tying our wagons to. Is that the expression?
Yes.
Tying our wagons to. So,
I hope.
Yeah, that seems right.
Yeah, that feels good.
We did Superflex rankings a little while ago, but as you could tell from this episode, things are changing weekly. There it is. We did it. We always get the expressions locked down on this one. I usually start with them wrong and then we get to them eventually. So, but yeah, final pre-draft big boards next week. We'll do probably 24 players.
36, 48.
Maybe 36. I don't know.
50.
Whoa.
The beast.
Camp
Dynasty, the beast. Dude, 1,000 players. I don't know.
Yeah, happy Beast Day, by the way. What an event every year. Dane Brugler, the king.
Hey, that's what I'm using right now to look at how many wide receivers are going to be bad.
Where's Corley in the Beast these days?
11.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, nice.
Somehow below Roman Wilson.
Hey.
Good Senior Bowl.
Lot of people love Roman Wilson, man. That's what I've learned. I mean, I got him.
I didn't mention his name because he's relevant.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about it next week. We'll talk about it next week.
56% of his catches were first down conversions on third down.
Not bad.
That's pretty good.
Not bad. If you have been waiting for a take on a player, you'll get it next week. We're going to hit all of it. We'll deep dive the wide receiver group because I feel like that needs to happen. If there is a wide receiver whose name we haven't said yet in the last several months, it's going to get said next week.
Oh, Bub so, Means will be on the
Bub Means will make the program. But if you enjoyed Flavors of Takes this week, be sure to find us on Twitter at @camp_dynasty and TikTok at @camp.dynasty. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can get in touch with us at all of those places. Share your hot takes about this 2024 NFL draft and rookie class. We are eager to hear them. Let us know which takes you agree, disagree with from our side of things. And also be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe, and share and follow the pod feed because we appreciate that as well.
Tell me how dumb I am. We need the engagement.
Yeah. I would like to understand why I am stupid for thinking that Ladd McConkey is wide receiver 6 because it's... All right. Thanks for stopping by Camp Dynasty this week, and we'll see you next week.